Welcome to the Sons of Mjolnir podcast.
The Sons of... what?
This isn't your Sons of Macaroni, yeah!
The Sons of Mjolnir?
This is Sons of Mjolnir, yeah!
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Sons of Mjolnir. As always, I am one of your hosts, Fat Thor.
I'm Gorgon.
And unfortunately, Cap is not going to be able to join us today, but we are going to be joined by a very, very special guest. You may know him as the artist of such books as Deadpool, Green Lantern, Sinestro, X-Force, but most recently, what you probably know him for is Immortal Thor. Today, we are joined by the amazing Martin Kokolo. Thank you so much for coming to Nerding Out with us, my friend. We are so excited to have you on.
Thank you very much, guys. It's my pleasure. I'm really happy to be here, and thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. And I hope I said your name correctly. People who watch and listen to us know that I'm not an expert on name pronunciation, so I hope
I got you. I'm aware it's a little complicated for non-Spanish or Italian speakers. So
yeah, for us white stupid American people.
No, but, I never said stupid. Just
It's my words, not yours. But like I said before, we got on here. I had an opportunity just to tell you really quick. Like I said before, we are really big fans of your work. Actually, for those out there who have been watching and listening to us, we'll remember that one of our first episodes that we ever did was about Banner of War, and it was right before it came out, and we were so excited when we saw that you were on the art for it. We were both like, oh my God, this guy is freaking killing it. And as the Thor guy, you know, I obviously read a lot of Thor, and I was like, man, like, don't get me wrong, I love my boy Nick, like, I love my guy, but this guy,
he's great.
Yeah, I was like, this guy is killing it. And that I remember there's one panel from Banner of War, and it's a full Thor page, and he like said like bring the rage or something like that, and that was like my new favorite Thor panel. Like I like I said, I could praise you all day, but yeah, we're just super excited to have you on. We, like I said, it's kind of a full circle moment for us, so again, thank you for being here today.
Thank you it's my pleasure and it's an honor. So if you're a big Thor fan and you're enjoying what I do, so yeah, it's an honor for me.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. Like I said, not only are we Thor fans, but we're fans of you as well. So let's start talking about you, sir. So we kind of were doing a little research before we got on. So, you know, we know our, you know, a little something about a little something. So we were seeing you grew up in Uruguay in a little town called Colonia, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I still live in this town.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. So we kind of want to start off talking about a little bit about your comic origin story, if you would, like how you got exposed to comics. And we saw that you were a super huge fan of the X-Men and Spider-Man animated series. And you would draw while you would watch those and kind of copy the characters and stuff. Both of us are huge, huge fans of those shows and were kind of instrumental in our comic origin as well. So can you just kind of talk a little bit about like what from those shows really inspired you? And when you started drawing, like what was it that made you were like, oh, I need to try this or I need to put my hand into this?
I mean, I think as a guy who grew up in the 80s and 90s, I had like pretty much the same exposure to pop culture as pretty much everyone else. Like, I used to be a huge fan of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, He-Man, Thundercats, Silverhawks, all that wonderful stuff. Mm.
Speaking of my heart.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I always had like this this compulsion to actually try to draw the cartoons I watched as a kid. So I was a huge fan of just trying to draw and started tumbling like everyone else. So, and I also was a huge fan of reading, basically. Mm-hmm. So comics were like right there between completely visual media and written word. So I started reading comic. I was growing up without internet and stuff, and without streaming and all this wonderful stuff that we have today. Mm-hmm. So you were starving for content, as we call it today. So I would watch whatever I could. If it was animated, I would watch it. I didn't care if it was like for girls or for mm-hmm. for you know. I would watch every cartoon under the sun. I would try and read every comic available in my town, which was actually really hard to find material. We're talking late 80s and early 90s. So yeah, I mean, I would just draw all day and watch cartoons whenever I could. It wasn't like 24-hour cartoon as we had later. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was my origins, basically. Those were my origins. So and when I became older, I really wanted to make a living with art. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. I tried, like, I also liked like Magic the Gathering cards or Dungeons and Dragons. So I would also draw like fantasy stuff. I didn't know exactly that I wanted to work in comics, but I did know that I wanted to draw for a living. So at some point I was just out of high school, and I knew this person, this artist, who is currently working in DC. And he was a little, a few steps ahead of me in the career. Mm-hmm. So he said, come over and I give you hints and help you out in whatever ways I can. So I started assisting him, and he started perfecting my technique. I was a promising artist, but I had to learn a lot. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. So just helping out, like, as we said, in the kitchen, when you're in the kitchen working with another artist, you just you get better, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And at some point I decided to go ahead and try by myself and make a career of what I liked. And so far it's been working.
I would say it's working out pretty damn good for you, my friend, because you've been
It pays the bills, so yeah. So I'm happy.
Well, like I said, I think the stars really aligned and it worked out for you, because I mean, man, you have been pumping out some amazing work, and that kind of you kind of lead in perfectly to one of the questions I wanted to ask you. So you met this artist, and that's when you really kind of started honing your craft and, you know, really developing your skills. And yeah. I've saw that. So let me see where I have it here. So on one of these videos, someone asked you about, like, what's your biggest advice for up and coming artists. And I really loved your answer. You said, just get better. And then you go on to say that it's always about learning, and you always need to, you know, be honing your craft and learning and stuff. So my question is, in your opinion, I'm sure that you ask 10 different people, you get 10 different answers. How much of art, and especially, like I said, in your opinion, comes from, say, like, natural born talent and like just developing your craft? Because it seems like you're a very big proponent of the hard work is kind of where you need to go, and it's not about, you know, how much inherent talent that you have, but it's about putting in the hours and putting in the work. So can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
You always get the every time someone looks at what you do, you always get the typical phrase like oh, it's so wonderful, you have such a wonderful gift. This is like it's super common. It always happens. So I'm always reminding people, like, you it's true. You do have some gift, but it's impossible. It's completely impossible to get to the level like a professional level without an insane insane amount of dedication and try to get better page after page after page. I have no idea by at this point how many pages I've drawn, but we were talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comic pages. So when someone just looks at something you do and they say like, yeah, you have a wonderful gift, it's like, really? Like, I mean, there are things I am a type of artist who I don't know. I look at a page I draw like last week and I already hate it. I can't help it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I go back to watch and see work I've done, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, and I see some things that I like and things that are still okay or still hold up, but there's a lot that I have a really hard time looking at it. So I'm always trying to improve. I'm always trying to get better. I always trying to improve my visual storytelling also. Sometimes you get hold up in details or try to do you have to let go your ego, and it's not always about what's beautiful, trying to do a beautiful page or something that is you know, the you want to, if you really want to draw comics, you should always pay attention to your storytelling before you actually pay attention to your art, to how beautiful or how, I don't know, amazing or whatever you want to call it, the image you want to develop. Mm-hmm. So I'm always trying to hone my skills, as you said, with that in mind. So yeah, it's not about your gift, it's not about your natural talent, it's about hard work, dedication, and always like every day trying to improve. It's like you know, like bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. If you work your biceps, you won't notice a your bicep getting bigger or more defined from one day to the next. But if you push it, if you go long enough, you will start to develop whatever you're looking for. So that's basically it. You might be strong, naturally strong, but you have to put on the hours and the work to actually achieve your goals in whatever you're trying to do. So yeah, that's basically what.
You put in a lot of hard work and hours into your craft. So coming from somebody who grew up watching the X-Men, loving Magneto, the first comic you read was Alpha Flight, you said before growing up, and you were
my first Marvel.
Now, you're the first comic you drew for Marvel was X-Force. You've got to draw on Beast. You loved Magic the Gathering. Yeah. Now you're doing Magic the Gathering covers for IDW. So you put in all the work and the time, and now you're getting to draw at a professional level all the things that inspired you when you were a kid starting out drawing. Does that bring you like a sense of pride and accomplishment to go,
yeah,
I dreamed I get to do this, and now I literally get to draw all the things I love?
Yeah, I mean, it always brings this warmth to my heart. I've talked about it many times. I used to And remember, growing up in Uruguay, which is a really small country between Argentina and Brazil, growing up in the 80s, I used to I would go through the pages of comic books, and I used to I thought that comic artists were like gods. Well, they were like godlike figures. They were, I can't put into words how much I admired all these people. Like I don't know, like I grew up reading Bernie Wrightson. Kelly Jones, later in life, Todd McFarlane with Spawn and all that. And growing up with those artists in mind, they were like gods to me. I couldn't understand how they managed to draw at that level. It was insane for me. I had problems like getting my head around it. So, every time I think about it, my inner kid, you know, he will be really proud about it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's amazing. It's fantastic. Every once in a while, you tend to normalize it, you know, because it's a job. At the end of the day, it's a job, and it's really demanding, and it takes an insane amount of hours and work and dedication. So you tend to normalize this stuff, but every once in a while, I try to remember. I try to visit that little place in my heart in which all my memories and all my childhood memories are located. Mm. And I just think about the journey I've done, and yeah, I look at it with a great sense of pride. Not ego, just pride, just enjoying the fact that I'm achieving what I've learned, what I dreamed many moons ago. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's ego at all, and that kind of leads in perfectly. Not only are you kind of part of this club now, but you're part of the best of the best of the club. And that's not just me saying that. You are part of it's the class of 2023 Marvel Stormbreakers. And yeah, for those out there who don't know what that is basically kind of Marvel saying like, hey, these are the people to watch out for, and like the best kind of artists that they have right now. So how did, like Gorgon was saying, how does it feel to draw all of these things that you loved as a kid? How does it feel to then be acknowledged by one of the biggest comic book publishers in the world for those drawings, and kind of establishing yourself, like I said, not just my opinion or your opinion, but the industry itself saying like, hey, you are one of the best that we have? How does that feel?
It's incredibly, incredibly rewarding. When they ask you if you would be willing to work on a project with them for the first time, that is amazing. It's a huge accomplishment. Then they asked me, they were very happy with me. They were happy with how I made the deadlines and the quality of the work I was putting out. So they asked me if I wanted to be an exclusive artist. Mm-hmm. So that was again incredibly rewarding and amazing. And then they asked me if I wanted to participate as a Stormbreaker. If I wanted to be part of the program. So that was again amazing. So it's been an ascending spiral. Every step of the way is fantastic. It's incredibly rewarding. It's again it makes you proud of I mean you you it's wonderful to see that all the work you put into your career, it's paying off. And yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. It's an amazing feeling. Yeah. It's humbling. It's also incredibly humbling. I mean, you get a sense of pride, but at the same time, you are presented with a rest of amazing artists, and you feel like I don't know, it makes you proud of being there, but at the same time you realize that you are surrounded by people who are extremely talented too, and they work really, really hard. And I've had the immense pleasure of knowing them in person, and they are amazing people. So I don't know, it's great. It makes you feel really, really good about it. So yeah.
Just the artist, you get to work with an incredible group of writers. And earlier you were saying how you feel like as an artist, it's important to know the story before you begin trying to put the art together. So when you say that, what do you feel like the relationship between the writer and artist, you know, should be like? And in your opinion, when it's done properly, you know, when that relationship is done well, do you feel like it makes for a more symbolic story when the work of the two seems cohesive?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, definitely. In my experience, sometimes people think that we actually all the artists involved in a project are usually all over the world, so we don't get to hang around much. Actually, it would be great to do it, but it's almost a privilege now to actually sit with the author and come up with stuff. We don't get to do that these days. Mm-hmm. So what we usually do is that the writer figures out all the details with the editors, and then they pass along the scripts and the details and the notes, and you figure out the last details with them. But we are not as involved as we should. I mean, it would be great if we had the opportunity, but sometimes we don't really get it. Sometimes I just received a script and I just work on it. But I always have the channel, the proper channels to work with writers. I've had an amazing experience with the writers I've had so far. For example, with Marvel, I've worked with Benjamin Percy, with Alyssa Wong, with Danny Cates, and now I'm working with Al Ewing, and I'm losing. I've worked with someone else. I'm losing right now. Mm-hmm. I've done smaller stuff too, mm-hmm. but I mean, the relationship with them has been great, has been awesome. I have absolutely no complaints, and we understand like they know what to expect from me, and they know how to ask for certain stuff, and I anticipate what they want. And pretty much I get I pretty much always get it right. Sometimes I get it wrong, and we adjust stuff. But yeah, it's a symbiotic relationship with them, and if all goes well, the end product will look great and will read great, which is what we want actually. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's about paying a lot of attention to, you know, it's like the building blocks, you know, it's the foundation. The storytelling should be the foundation of a comic book. It's not just it has to look pretty or has to, you know, like it has to have the right punches and the right action, and then you don't care about other scenes. No, everything has to work and has to be the reader should have a cohesive story and should have the opportunity to read without interruption the story. So yeah, that's basically it.
Well, and that brings me to my next one, my next question for you on that, because in the past on that, you've talked a little bit about how you get your story from your writers, and then you feel your process for when you're doing it, because you've said you do all the your own choreography for the fight scenes yourself, that you felt like power scaling is some of the most difficult things to do on page, particularly with like time reversal. But you've said that not making camera movements confusing is important to help the reader, you know, read as naturally as possible, that you feel the layout is the foundation and the styles, the dressing on it. That absolutely shows when even like this wonderful image behind me, right, where your focal point is the explosion and you can tell the focal points push the panels off. It reads so easy on the eye. It draws you in the reader. Can you talk a little bit more about your process of how you create your layouts, because they're so visually appeasing on the eye using standard art principles? I'd love to hear more on that.
Yeah, I mean, I adhere to you know, comics work with the same principles like movies, for example. So I try to always keep those principles in mind. I have to, and you also have the help of editors and the writer, because sometimes you design a particular scene and it might work for you, but then they read it and they feel like this isn't working, or maybe this character should be here or there, or maybe we could move this panel a little, because not only the difficult part to figure out sometimes is not just about the shots and reverse shots and all that stuff, but also the paneling. So it's not for example, if you're making a movie, you have to figure out when you put the camera to make it something that flows nicely. But in comics, you have to do that. But at the same time, you have to figure out where you put your panels. So it's like a double work in that regard. So you always try to we as Westerners, we read from left to right. So you try to make the action and the flow of a scene go from left to right, and you should be as clear as possible. You don't want to mess up in your readers. Readers should always if you make readers figure out a scene, you did it wrong. A reader should not figure out like where are the characters talking, you know, where are they placed and where the dialogue is coming from. If they have to work really hard to do that, you did your work wrong. So you have to make it flow as nicely and as fluid as possible, and in the process you have to, you know, try to make it as appealing as possible too, visually appealing. So yeah, those moving pieces are there, and then we can talk about this. Could go on for hours about camera placing, you know, all the tricks, all the basic tricks, like where you put your camera to make a character look powerful or look weak, or when you have to zoom out, when you have to, you know, when you have to make establishing shots. So some people fail on the establishing shot department. Sometimes you read comics that don't have the proper establishing shots, and you have no idea like where things are happening. It's in comics, I believe it's really hard to realize. It's like it's easier to notice when a job was done incorrectly than when it was done correctly. If the job, if all the moving pieces and all the shots and everything was done right, you read it so the flow is so nice and so natural that you don't even feel what you read. Mm. You don't realize how well the job was done, basically. But if the job is was poorly done, you'll get it like this. Mm-hmm. You notice it immediately. So yeah.
Compare, you know, the way you do comics to movies in that regard. I think that's super cool. That's such a unique take when you're talking about choreography with it. Before you got on, I was actually nerding out with Thor about how much I love your use of chiaroscuro in your black and whites that you use with your lighting mm-hmm. on the faces, which I was telling him is most notable, you know, in American culture coming from Apocalypse Now back in the day. You did such a wonderful one that I think still on your page of Geralt from The Witcher, and then you did one of Sinestro in a cover variant that you have of that with yeah. him with an incredible mm-hmm. top-down chiaroscuro lighting that I absolutely loved. When you're doing your Green Lanterns and your Sinestros and stuff, you come up with some really creative ways to show their constructs. Were there any movies in particular that were an inspiration for how you chose to do some of these really cool constructs that you're drawing?
No, to be honest, not in that regard. I'm always inspired by pretty much everything, like every media under the sun. Like I'm always struggling to find time to enjoy everything I actually like, because I love movies, I love video games, I love comics. I mean, and putting it's like a blender, you know, you put all that in your head and just things, you know, happen. I mean, sometimes when I'm reading a script, sometimes I get like a really like a powerful you know, inspiration. Maybe it's based on I don't know, a movie I saw or whatever. But sometimes you have to look for it. So sometimes you have to read the script and try out things when you do your layouts. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm always inspired by media, and I think it's really important for comic artists always consume media whenever you can, because it's a way to. I also think that you should. I like to enjoy like old stuff, like classic stuff, but I try to be with the times too, you know, like be part of the zeitgeist. So I don't get lost in that. I try whenever I can, I try to be aware of current media and aesthetics and see what other people you notice like trends, you know, you notice things that work in a certain way. Mm-hmm. There's like an energy. It's something that it's always in motion. So you try to get with the times. So But at the same time, as you said, I love chiaroscuro. I love things in contrast. I love to do things that sometimes when the time is right, I like to do things that evoke a certain, you know, 1930s horror stuff, like Universal stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's a mix of many facets of what I enjoy as a media consumer, and what I try to bring to the table as an artist.
Absolutely. And I mean, I can definitely, you were talking about like kind of horror influences. I can definitely see that, like in your Deadpool, for example, in some of like the creative ways that you show like the violence of a character like Wade Wilson.
Yeah.
You can totally, like, I think it's like issue 2 or 3, you have Wade with like the arm, like extra arms, yeah, coming out of him, and I was like, totally reminded me of like John Carpenter's The Thing or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So I can definitely see that.
With Deadpool, for example, it was all about body horror. So I went like full on body horror and tried to do it as disgusting. I mean, they usually ask me to tone down stuff because I tend to go, I can't, you don't have complete, complete liberty, complete freedom to do, you can't go too gruesome. I've had editors just ask me.
Martin's like, what do you mean? Stuff. I can't have his head just explode. Like, what?
The arm coming out of his mouth, sir. That was
so cool.
I love that. I would love for you to get to write a symbiote comic and just let the gore out.
I would love to do something like that, like super gruesome.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I've never had the chance. I mean, I don't know, with Marvel, there are like legal aspects too. So you can't go like full. I would have to do it like in a independent book or something that maybe in the future I'll try. But yeah, I would love to go like full body horror. That would be great. That would be amazing. I would love to do it sometime in the future. Yeah.
Well, we can't wait to see it. And that also reminds me of another one of my favorite parts of going fast forwarding a little bit to Banner of War. I want to ask you about the choreography of that. But speaking of the body horror stuff, that you said sometimes you have to tone it back. Was this in a situation where you toned it back in this the scene of where Thor throws Mjolnir through Hulk's, or traps it underneath him, and Hulk pushes through and Mjolnir comes through his chest? Did you tone that back, or was that
Exactly.
Pates go like, oh, go for it, man?
No, I had to tone it back.
I mean it was
the same shot, but it was much more gruesome. And they asked me to tone it down. Yeah.
That specific scene
was I wouldn't say controversial. I mean, we all had a laugh about it, but they asked me to tone it back a little, because I was showing too much stuff, and it was I was like too realistic with some elements, yeah, like with the insights, you know. I was like way too specific, so they said, try to scale back the details, mm-hmm, and some stuff I was showing. So yeah.
Well, man, I would love to see the original version of that scene. But I mean, in my opinion, I think that scene, because that was the first issue, and that really, to me, set the tone for the event, and that was kind of what we really harped on in our Banner of War episode that we did, you know, forever ago now. Was usually in Hulk and Thor's history, all the times that they fought, which that's another panel I really wanted to bring up, was the one where Banner's in his mindscape and you showed all of the previous fights of theirs on the screen. Absolutely loved that. And like, you even the kind of matched the styles, like from Journey into Mystery and the Defenders stuff.
Yeah.
And I loved that panel so much. And I thought, like I said, it was so great. But going back to the question of, like I said, when you were working on that, and like I said, we talked about usually Hulk and Thor, they kind of punch each other a couple times and then they kind of, you know, go off and do their own thing. But Banner of War was really the first time, at least in my opinion, that they really went at it. And like you said, you choreographed your action scenes yourself. So what was it like to not only choreograph those action sequences throughout the whole event, but doing it with two of Marvel's kind of biggest characters? Like, I can only imagine how crazy that was.
Yeah, that would be also like one of the examples of a good a symbiotic relationship between Danny and me, because Danny kept asking for crazier and crazier stuff, and I would just go at it, and every issue I would get from Danny, things were like scaling, like it was insane. it was a ton of fun for me. It was a lot of work, a lot of dedication, but it was so fun. You know, it was literally like taking two action figures and just smash them together, but then you go and pick bigger action and then you smash those together and you start adding and the action get like really crazy. I don't know, man. It was great for me. It was a lot of fun. I think you can tell when you experience media. I think you can tell when creators are having fun with something, you know. Mm-hmm. And I for once had a great time working on Banner of War, and I think it shows. Did my best. I did my absolute best, and I'm really, really proud of how it came out. So yeah, I mean, it was amazing. It was great writing from Danny, and he gives you these opportunities for you to shine. You know, he gives you these action pieces, you know, these huge I can't remember the exact name in movies, like these set pieces, and you just you get a splash page and says like, we have a small inset panel of the two fists coming together, and then we have a splash page of the fucking planet exploding.
Yeah,
and it was like, and I'm like, dude, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to draw the hell out of this. Yeah. You know, so it was like that, like page after page of that. So it was. I mean, I couldn't ask for more. I had a great time. So yeah, it was. When I say it was easy for me to do that, I'm not saying that it wasn't. I mean, it was extremely complicated in the detail level and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of work and time you had to put on the project. But at the same time, it came easy for me because the action was so great, it was so awesome, that I mean, it was incredibly fun to do.
that fun for sure translates onto the page, because it is absolutely a phenomenal read, and it is so fun to read. And
Banner of War, it was in our top five stories for the year. We thought it was amazing, and I love that you mentioned getting to work with Kate, because now you're getting to write Immortal Thor, and you're getting to work with Al Ewing, and he said something that and we love his work, by the way. We are a huge fan of him as a writer and Kate's as a writer, but he said something about Thor that I know Brother Thor loves, about how Thor shouldn't be like other heroes. He should be more. He should shatter mountains, stand in the thunder that kills, turn back ancient winters, and defeat death itself. And Brother Thor and I can agree, we feel like whether it be Banner of War or now an Immortal Thor, you have taken that and you have really turned that mantra to life. It shows in your work on that. When now that you've got to work with Cates, who wrote Thor for so long, and now you're writing with Al, who's writing Thor, and this is his mentality on how it should be. What's it like getting to work with Al Ewing as a writer, being his main artist on it?
Fantastic. Really fantastic. They have with Danny, for example, they have very different styles, but they're both great in their respective styles, and you know, working with Al in this particular project, I was asked to not actually asked. No one really asked, but I got the sense that it had to be a little cleaner this time. Kate's run on Thor. Thor is like brooding and dark, and he's like unkept. You know, he has the stubble, and he looks worn, you know, worn out. Mm-hmm. And now we, you know, it needs to be a little like more refined and reborn, and he has to look cleaner, and he has to smile more, and it has to be a little brighter, at least for now. Yeah, we don't know where the story is going, you know, but he wanted to sort of revisit what he loves about the character, and I got the sense that he has to be as powerful as ever, but a little cleaner and a little nicer, and with a hint of innocence, you know, so in a way that he could capture or recapture some of what made Thor the character that he is today, you know? So
jovialness. He has a happy jovialness, like when he's on the Rainbow Bridge, right? Standing right there with Lady Sif. I think compared to Klein's, where we had, you know, you said the brooding, but his that run was very heavy as the head that wears the crown. Right. The jovial nature wasn't there. His mind was elsewhere. And now we're seeing him a little more happy again.
Yeah. Exactly. I love the way that you just described that, because that's how I kind of set it in my head when I was first reading the first issue, because obviously I'm a huge, you know, Thor fan. And I love Nick's, you know, your fellow Stormbreaker, actually. I love his version of Thor.
Yeah, but I love it, too. He's amazing. Yeah, amazing.
You said it perfectly, and that's kind of I couldn't think of the words of how to say it, but like you said, your version I feel is a lot more polished, and where, you know, Nick was very brooding and like a very square kind of chiseled jawline, like very solid looking. Your Thor, like you said, is a lot more polished, and he smiles more, and I don't know, I said in my review of the first issue that you make him look larger than life, kind of how Al was saying, like, that's how Thor should look. And I love how, whether it's in the first couple pages when he's yelling at the storm that the storm betrayed him, and then also in the scenes of like him taking selfies with people of Midgard, like, you have that same sense of scale no matter what the the other scale that he's facing is. And like I said, he looks like he looms over every page. And I just think that that's, to me, that's Thor. And like you, again, like that quote that Gorgon said about Al, you just really captured that idea, I think, like so beautifully in this. I mean, we're only one issue in. At the time of this recording, we're one issue in. But
yeah,
man, it's just, like I said, the way you described it as polished, I think, is just perfect.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think I had to I had to work a little on that, because I tend to go darker and dirtier with my style. So I had to you know, I had to hold it back too. And at first, and this is really cool actually, because at first I felt like I felt like it was like too clean for me. I was worried about, you know, making it like too childish or too, yeah, you know, too bright. Yeah, too cartoony.
Especially with the classic suit, I'm sure that kind of also adds to the kind of challenge of that.
Yeah, exactly. So, and but I tried to let it go, you know, to try to trust in the material, trust in Al's writing. So I you know, I tore down some walls I was starting to build without really realizing about it. And I tried to just relax and go with the flow of this new project. And this that's actually really cool. That's like a really cool the opportunity to do that, to just relax and try not to be. Sometimes you have to do characters who are, you know, like smiling. They have to look fresh and natural and warm. And I like to draw to I love drawing, you know, like angry people. People, you know, like fighting and stuff. Yeah. And sometimes you feel silly when you draw characters smiling too much. You know, you're afraid, like, is this coming off like too silly, like like too cartoonish, as you said? But I try to trust in Al's script and his vision of the character, and I just went with it, and I think it's really working. It's really started to grow on me. I'm getting the more I advance with the character, with this new version of the character, I'm growing more and more comfortable with it. I've drawn. I'm working on the fifth issue right now. I can't say anything about it. But the more I draw Thor in this iteration, the more I enjoy him. So yeah, it's been a journey. It's been a real journey for me too, as an artist, and I'm having a lot of fun, and I think I'm working on like the best work I've done, I believe. So I'm really happy with it.
With your portfolio of work, that's a big statement, my friend. But I gotta ask you about the Elder Gods and Utgard Thor, because I am just absolutely, utterly fascinated with what you guys are cooking with that corner of the universe. And so for listeners and watchers out there and people who may not be familiar with kind of Thor lore, the Utgard Elder Gods and what we're talking about. So some people might know them as those who sit above in shadow. And they were referenced in Michael Oeming's run, Thor Disassembled. They were in a couple issues. They were also in Al Ewing's recent Loki series. They showed up at the end there. But we've only ever seen them as kind of like silhouettes almost, or just very kind of, kind of as the name says, shadows. So in this first issue, we're introduced to Utgard Thor, and we see him in all of his glory. And I gotta tell you, dude, that page of like the close up of his face, I'm still thinking about that to this day. Like, I'm having nightmares. That was such a crazy. I was like, I literally turned back, I was like, oh my god, like right in my face. But my question is, what was it? What was kind of your process in coming up with the visual look of? I mean, I know we're going to be seeing more as the run goes on, and I know you can't really get into that. But did you look at those earlier designs and like kind of build off of that, or where? How did you come up with that?
The designs were actually made by Alex Ross. So I didn't design Thoranos. I didn't design Utgard Loki. Those are his designs. So okay. I just went drawing the Utgard scenes was actually kind of hard for me because Al wanted like pretty much complete darkness. So. Mm-hmm. I work showing stuff, so I had to in this particular case I had to be like super subtle, like super subtle with those scenes. I think they came out looking pretty good.
They look amazing.
I like the introduction. I like the very first page. I love doing that page in particular. Mm-hmm. I think it works really great. And but yeah, I didn't. The designs are not mine actually. I just took them and ran with them.
Okay,
those are Ross's designs. Well,
despite who designed them, you drew it phenomenally. And we were talking about this when before you got on. We were looking at your pencils for issue 2 that you tweeted out a couple days ago. And I mean, who is it? Matt Wilson is colors?
Matt Wilson, yeah.
Matt Wilson's colors are phenomenal. He really brings your work to life.
Beautiful.
Your shading, though, like we were looking at the pencils for issue 2, and I was like, it almost doesn't even need color. Like, it's just the way that you, I'm not as well versed in like art terminology. So I apologize if this may not make sense, but like I said, like the way you use your shading and like even your lightning, which to me, not being an artist, I would think you need color to make that look impactful. But it looks so good just off your pencils, man. Like, it's just, I think.
Thank you.
It really exemplifies Gorgon. You're going to have to help me with that term you threw out earlier with the shading. Yeah. I think.
So we were talking earlier on the lighting, the way you use lighting, with Charlie Screw on things. But I was even talking with him beforehand. You know, we see as comic fans, a lot of comic fans like to go get tattoos of their favorite panels. And a lot of times your tattoo artist has to take some liberties because it doesn't always translate as well over. But your black and white that you have, you use the negative space of the white so well with the black around it. Even I'm looking at one right now on my screen of that you have with Deadpool, where he has the extra arms coming out of him. A tattoo artist could literally pluck that, put a scan of that on someone's body and go at it, and it would look perfect. And that is rare for an artist. I nothing but kudos to you on that, sir.
thank you thank you. I mean, I don't know, I just that's just the style I like. I like to sometimes I think like I'm putting too much work on this and you know the colorist will I should leave this or that to the color, you know. But for some reason, I can't. I mean, I want to look at. I mean, I grew up. It might be part of. I grew up reading a lot of black and white material, like Argentinian comic artists who were absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I grew up. I if you look at Bernie Wrightson for example, if you look at Alberto Breccia, It's so beautiful. The pages, the just the black and white page, you know, the inked page, is those pages are so beautiful. Like I like to I aspire to draw beautiful pages in black and white. If they want to add color and the color looks beautiful, the Matt Wilson's color is fantastic. He's going for a more you know, like painterly quality, and he's doing an amazing job. He's making it look bright, and the world is so colorful and bright and awesome. But he also goes like super dark when he needs to, and yeah. He's fantastic job. But what I want to do, I want to look at the pages. I don't draw a page to make it look like it needs color. I draw a page in a way that I can see it hanging on a wall, and it's a piece of art, and it's it is a finished piece of art. If you want it finished, it's finished. If you want to add color, it's perfectly fine too. Mm-hmm. But I really, really enjoy black and white and grayscale stuff. So that's what I do. I try to draw stuff that I love. And if you see other artists, I don't know, if you watch a Pepe Larraz page, or a Olivier Coipel, or a Lenin Francis Yu, those pages are beautiful. Like a black and white ink and some ink wash, and if you have a good artist with a black ink and some ink wash, they will do some absolutely phenomenal work with those and the shading and all the stuff and the contrast. Again, I grew up with artists like Kelly Jones and Bernie Wrightson, and artists more closer to me, like Argentinian artists, who are absolutely phenomenal. So I loved all that ever since I was a kid. I've been a huge fan of that. So that's what I want to do with what I do. That's what I want to do with my art. So yeah, I always try to make it as dramatic. I like dramatic lighting, basically. Mm-hmm.
You have nailed that to a T.
Thank you. And I love, too, just kind of your perspective on art in itself. I think it kind of goes back to what we were talking about with the hard work and, you know, putting in your hours and always trying to improve on your craft. Because I'm sure, I mean, we would never name names here or anything like that, but I'm sure that there are a lot of artists out there who maybe, you know, will cut a corner and be like, oh, well, the colorist can fix that, or like, oh, that can be taken care of a color. Yeah. And I appreciate your perspective on it, that you want to do the best work you can at all times. And when you finish a page, you want it to be, you could take it off your, you know, drawing table and hang it up on the wall right then and there. And the color just kind of adds to the art that you've already created.
I can't speak for everybody. I just, every artist decides when their page is done, basically. And so that comes with years of hard work, I believe, because especially when you start working on art, it feels like the page is never fully ended. You just stop at some point, because it's unhealthy to just go on. You know, you can't work. You can take a week to work on a page. That doesn't work. That won't pay the bills. You know, so. And I aspire to, at some point, and there are phenomenal artists who will just, you know, they do like three lines, and those lines are so beautiful and so expressive, and you don't need anything else. You know what I mean? There are artists like, it's about I once heard it's about what you when I first started I used to draw an insane amount of detail on pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. And at the end it becomes like bothersome. It's bothersome and cumbersome for the reader to look at a piece of art that has like too many details. It kills the aesthetics. It kills, mm-hmm. you know, the freshness of a page.
Yeah.
So over time and working, you know, working hard and try, you start to develop the idea that it's much better to suggest stuff than to actually show it. It looks better, it feels better, and it takes less time for you to render those things. So over time, I've tried to look for a type of style that it's economic in details, but the details, the ones that are on the page, should tell a bigger story and should feel rounded and right. And the details should feel right. They shouldn't feel like there are too few or too many. They should feel right for mm-hmm. the story and for the reader's eye. So yeah, that's basically what I try to do every time I work on a page.
Balanced. You do. Mm-hmm. Looking at your yeah. art, I was describing it earlier to TJ here as the way you use your darks and your negative space and your absence of color in areas with it is well balanced. You balance mm-hmm. well. Yeah. We always yeah. like to ask all of our writers when we're on this, and I'd like to ask you as an artist, because you grew up reading, you know, like you mentioned, comics that were in black and white, and you grew up reading Alpha Flight and stuff now. We've talked a little bit about how you like to consume other things to inspire you. What are you personally reading right now for fun that you're like, that's a comic I have to mm-hmm. read when it comes out?
Right now, I started, but... I have like very little time at the moment. I have a 3-year-old girl, so I work many hours a day, and then when I stop working, I just spend time with my daughter, and then spend time with my wife, just a couple of hours, and then go to bed and repeat
all the same.
Yeah, right now. Right now, I'm reading. I'm starting to read Nick Klein's run on Hulk. I'm really interested in it. Yeah, that's what. But I just started. Like literally, I started yesterday or a couple of days before, and I read a few pages and I fell asleep because I was extremely tired. That's true. I mean, I have so many, you know, like video games I would love to play and I can't. I would, mm-hmm. you know, there are many things I would love to read, but I really have no time.
You got comics to draw, right?
Yeah, exactly. But when you work on comics, it becomes really hard to actually read comics.
Yeah,
it becomes hard to have the time to do it. But yeah, I'm reading. I'm trying to read Nick Klein's Hulk because everything I see, the images he shares, they are absolutely like top notch work, and I'm intrigued to see where it goes. And I loved Immortal Hulk from Al. So I'm intrigued to see because it looks like similar in that regard. So I'm intrigued to see to see what it is and where it goes.
Yeah, it's a well, spoiler alert for you. It's really good. I'm really enjoying it. I think it's only it's only 3 issues out, so you're still early enough in. You're not too far behind.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, I'm reading it in you know, Marvel Unlimited.
Yeah, that's
and this right now there's only 1 issue there, I believe. So yeah, I'll wait and see.
Wait till it comes. The rest of it gets on there and just binge the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Yeah, like I said, I'm really loving it. Philip Kennedy Johnson, he's a powerhouse in the writing department, and we've already talked about how much we all love Nick Klein. But I wanted to ask you, going back to Thor just for a second, really quickly. Like you're actually the first artist that we've had on the Sons of Mjolnir, and so we've asked writers this kind of question before, but I've never gotten the perspective from an artist before. So when you get Thor, I mean, obviously you did Banner of War, but when you're on like the ongoing title, what is the kind of, do you have like a sort of research process when you get a new character? Like, are you looking back? I mean, like we talked about in this, at least first couple issues, Thor is in his classic costume. So are you like looking back at like Jack Kirby stuff? Are you looking back at Nick Klein stuff or like other iterations of Thor to see where you want to differentiate and like other areas where you might want to translate?
No, not really. For example, I'm a huge Olivier Coipel fan.
Oh, so good.
I'm super aware of his run on Thor, and I love it. Yeah. I really, really love it. When it comes to drawing scripts, usually the scripts, for example, in Banner of War, there were times in which, you know, for example, Banner of War was smacked between Thor's run and Hulk's run. Mm-hmm. So they sent me all the reference material. They sent me all the issues from Ryan Otley's Hulk and Nick Klein's Thor. But I don't like to base what I do on other people. I just need them. If they ask me to draw, to be consistent with X, you know, technology that appears on the Ryan Otley's run, I have to go there as a source material. Mm-hmm. But then I do it in my own style. So people will always pick up on those things, and people sometimes they suggested, for example, in Banner 4, that I was trying to emulate this or that artist. Mm-hmm. That was never the intention. I never do that. I just go ahead and do. People say like sometimes my art evokes the Kuiper's work. Yeah. Of course it is. Of course it does. Mm-hmm. That's like one of my pillars as an artist. So of course there is, you know, the inspiration is there, but I never look at them as a specific, you know, like, oh, I'm going to draw this face or this character based on this artist. No, I never do. I would never do that. So yeah, that's basically it. For example, in this case, in Al's project, he's always referencing. He sends me stuff and says, "Hey, I would like to, you know, to explore this, you know, this storyline or this character that appeared on this issue from 1960, whatever." So I go there and I find out, because I didn't grow up reading Thor, so I'm not I'm not well versed on the lore, so I learn as I go. So yeah, I mean, and for example, you know that the spread, the last spread I posted on Twitter, that whole scene is based on a already existing scene by Pasquale Ferri, I believe it is. I don't remember exactly the issue, but that is a callback to a scene that was previously done, I don't know how many years ago. So I'm always asked to do callbacks and take characters and bring them back, characters from the 60s or 70s or whatever, and many surprises along the way that you guys will find out as the story moves on. Usually the references are provided to me. I don't go looking for them, or I don't go into the project saying, okay, I'm going to base this character on this specific artist or whatever. It actually makes me really uncomfortable. Sometimes they ask me to do things like things that are already done. Another artist did this, this scene, and they asked me to do it again, like draw it completely again. And I don't really like homages. I don't really redrawing stuff that other artists have done. I only do it when there's no other, when they asked me, they specifically asked me to work on those on that stuff. But I will always give it my own spin, of course. But yeah, that's basically how it goes. I have inspirations as everyone else, but I try to always do do it my way, and you can go see my entire catalog, and whatever I do, good or bad, it's mine.
I don't swipe.
It's yours. I love that.
I don't, don't swipe. I don't even so much as another character, another artist, one face or one eye or one hand. I don't do that. I do it myself, for better or worse. I do it myself.
Love that. I love that approach too. And I just, the reason I ask is because, like, say for writers, like for Al, like I'm sure Al was reading a lot of Thor when he got to reference. So I was curious if for artists, if it's kind of a similar thing, and not, like you said, not to copy anyone's style, but just to see like what has been done and what can I do differently to bring to this character. But that's just very interesting.
Yeah, you just go ahead. I mean, at least that's the way I like to do it. I don't know. I don't think it's wrong for artists to copy like some stuff, because usually from copying new stuff comes unless you like swipe, like you bring nothing new to the table, that of course I would 100% prescribe against. But if you copy some things you like of your favorite artist, and then you give it your own spin and a new, it's transformative, like the cases of how do you say it? I don't remember the word. When you are allowed to use another material, if you transform it,
use or like sampling or something.
Exactly. If you take something and you make something new, with that source material, I have no problem with that. But I don't really go that way. I just try to I do have you know, I do have inspirations. I do have people I aspire and I admire deeply, and their works are always, you know, hanging around, living rent free,
yeah.
Living rent free, as they say, in my head. But no, I don't go, you know, specifically to other artists, like trying to base what I do on them. No, I don't really do that.
I love that. Straight off the dome, baby. I love it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on and talking with us today about the things that inspire you and your work. Before we get out of here, I do want to ask you one last question. Since you're talking about putting your own spin on things, are there any characters that you haven't got to draw yet in a comic that you're like crossing your fingers that one day you get to draw your way and put in a comic that we can hopefully look forward to?
Yeah, many. Many. I would love to work on Magneto. I would love to work on a very savage Wolverine story, for example. I would love to work on horror, on straight up horror stuff. I would love to work on Blade, for example. I've always been a fan. Yeah.
Okay. I would be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I love comic characters, and I love, you know, trying to make them as badass as I can, and I would love to draw, you know, more like intimate horror stories. I would love to do that. I would love to go back in time and draw some episodes, some issues for Immortal Hulk, for example. I really love Immortal Hulk. I think it's an amazing work, and I would have loved to draw some issues of Immortal Hulk. So those stories like dark science fiction, like the Twilight Zone niche stuff, you know, and if it was like black and white horror science fiction,
oh,
that would be fantastic for me. So yeah, so maybe in the future, I still have many years on my tank, I hope. So yeah. We'll explore many styles and characters if I can.
Well,
we look forward to all of it.
Yeah, I would say we look forward to it, and we will be front row for all the stuff you got coming on, man. Like I said, we're huge fans of yours. Thank you so much for coming to Nerd Now with us today. It has been an absolute pleasure. Like I said, you're actually the first artist that we've had on the show.
Well, it's an honor.
Yeah, it's an honor to have you, my friend. And as the Thor guy, it was just an absolute dream to be able to nerd out about Thor and about Banner of War. So again, just thank you so much for your time today, sir. Before you get out of here, though, is there anything else that you'd like the people out there to know? Obviously, we have Immortal Thor is coming out with issue 2 in a couple weeks. What else you got working on? Where can the people find you?
Well, they can find me on Instagram and Twitter, basically. And yeah, no, I'm full time on Immortal Hulk and doing variants as always as a Stormbreaker. But yeah, I have Immortal Hulk commands my full time. So yeah, that's what I do, and that's where you guys can find me if you want.
Awesome.
So hopefully you all enjoy what I do.
If anyone out here is listening or watching this right now, I will give you my personal guarantee you will enjoy it, and you will enjoy Immortal Thor. I could not be more excited to see as the layers unfold in these next couple issues. I mean, I saw that Al was talking about potentially 50 issues, so I mean, I can't wait, man. It's going to be so great. But again, thank you so much for being here today. But as far as that goes, I think that's all we really have for everyone out there today. Gorgon, do you have anything else for the people out there?
You know, I just want to reiterate again, thank you so much, Mr. Martin, for coming on and being here with us. And for all of our listeners and our followers and viewers out there, please follow Mr. Martin Kokolo on Instagram. Follow him on Twitter. Keep up with his work. He's a super nice, personal gentleman. Drink your water. We hope your stacks are fat. We hope you stay hydrated, that you at least eat two meals today, bare minimal. And it's been wonderful. Thanks.
I can do this all day.